All right, ready, boys?
Yeah, we're ready.
Kendall, you ready?
Hell!
Yeah.
Is your mic on? All right, cool.
Hell, I suck at dating. With Dean Ungler and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
And Kendall Long. What's up, Suck Army? We're back in studio today. It's so good to be here. You guys want to know what I realized? The suck noise. I just still love it. You guys want to know what I realized on the way over to the podcast today? This is the fourth calendar year that Help I Suck at Dating has been around.
Wow.
And I know that's a bit of an embellishment because technically we've only been doing it for like 28 months, but it started in 2017, 2018, 2019, and now in 2020, four calendar years. And
wow.
It's definitely the longest commitment I've ever had in my life.
It's the longest you've ever done anything.
Absolutely. And sure, I've been in and out, up and down throughout the whole 4 years, but, you know, I'm proud.
I've been on my own. I've been with Vanessa. I've been with Jared.
But here we are, back in studio. It's my first time in studio in 2020. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, feel free to do that. We checked in on me. I think I called in from London.
Yes, check it with Dean Ungler.
Yes, and I kind of updated you guys on my injury, and I guess we can kind of continue to do that as the recovery goes on. Do you want to see the scar real quick, Jared?
Yeah, ooh. It looks like a tattoo.
It always looks like a centipede, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a centipede.
Or a millipede. Which one is it?
Millipede would be much more a little...
I feel like it would have more dots.
So for the audience who can't see it, it's right above the... So it's on his right... thigh on the right side, right above his Instagram verified tattoo.
Yep, I got that.
It's about, I'd say, a good 4.5 inches, 5 inches long.
6 inches.
Six inches?
That doesn't seem like 6 inches. I think you're rounding up.
I think it's just the angle you guys are looking at from, I promise.
Yeah, as you pull up your pants, pull up your pant legs and brag about your 6 inches.
You have a ruler.
I mean, if that's 6 inches, I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah. It's funny because I was laying in the hospital bed and it was all bandaged up and it was like the day after surgery. And the doctor comes in and I was asking about the incision and everything. And he goes, yeah, it's 6 centimeters long. We did 3 screws and a plate in your hip. And then after a couple of days when I could take the bandage off, I was like, that's not 6 centimeters long because 6 centimeters is like 1.5 inches.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's surprisingly small. Turns out it's 6 inches long. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they put 5 screws in a plate in my hip. So I don't know if it was like a communication thing.
Did they ask for your consent beforehand?
For the surgery?
The screws in? I feel like that's so invasive.
Well, yes, very invasive.
Yeah.
They did ask my consent, but I was like hopped up on painkillers when they asked.
Oh, they're like 5 screws. Like, oh, wait, no, 3, but you know.
So how many screws do you want?
Yeah.
Just so you know, each one's
like,
going to be a couple
of $1,000.
Maybe
$2.
Yeah. I think I mentioned last week, but when they were doing all that stuff, like I was like hopped up on painkillers and they were like, yeah, we're doing this. Can sign this form. And I'm like, okay. And then I woke up a couple hours later. But I don't want to talk about me too much today because we obviously have Kendall in studio. She's going to be our co-host. And
happy to be here.
Yeah, we've got a great episode for you guys. We've got Kendall. Obviously, we want to catch up with her. And Jared was just in San Francisco doing Almost Famous Live. I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, we were in San Francisco this past weekend. We had an Almost Famous... Oh, I didn't. Ashley and Ben had an Almost Famous Live podcast. It was a lot of fun. Like 400 people came out, but... The reason I bring it up is because when I went on stage, because I was one of the guests, I went on after Derek, and I got on stage, and obviously I'm shamelessly plugging this podcast, telling everybody to listen, to subscribe, comment, follow us on Instagram, and then somebody from the audience goes, help, I suck at dating. So then I started screaming on stage. I'm like, yes, help, I suck at dating. And so I started doing it, and I got at least 40% of the people to start chanting, help, I suck at dating.
How great would it have been if while you were on stage chanting it, I walked in through the back door and started chanting and getting the back of the crowd riled up.
Help,
next time we do that.
He said, where is Dean when I need him? So there you go.
You create an angry mob.
That's pretty much my purpose in life.
Not an angry mob, a sucky mob.
Happy, sucky mob.
And then there was a section afterwards where we did like a little meet and greet, and at least 15 people came up to me and were like, hey, I'm part of Suck Army.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah.
Yes. Suck Army. It's a movement.
How many
it's growing.
How many were in attendance? Like 20,000? So 15 out of 20K? That's a good.
That's a lot.
It's like, whatever.
It's a starting point, Dean. Okay? But it was pretty cool when people came up and started, you know, commenting on how much they love the podcast, and it was a really cool moment. We need to change that sound effect.
It sounds like an octopus-like tentacle.
Yeah.
Right? Picture like an
sucking.
Octopus. Like.
Suck. They suck.
Yeah, but what I think we should do is we should make one of Dean yelling, like, Suck Army! Assemble!
That'd be pretty good.
Do-do-do.
Maybe like a vacuum cleaner just turning on real quick.
Oh, my dog would go crazy.
Oh, yeah. You
all the dogs in the world would be mad.
Anyway.
We'll work on changing that sound bite.
Yeah. But anyway, back to you, Kendall.
Yeah.
Kendall, thank you for joining us. You know what's funny? I mentioned this the last time you were on this podcast, but the first time I ever co-hosted this podcast was with you.
Yes, I remember.
And that was long before I was a staple on the podcast. Thank you, Amy.
But now Kendall has her own podcast, too, Down to Date.
This is true, Down to Date. Oh, I help other people find love.
You're our main competition.
I know. Bring it on,
and
suckers.
If you're wondering why we brought you here today, it's actually to murder you.
Yeah. You're going to die.
Doors are locked.
Tell us about it. How's Down to Date?
Yeah, so basically I facilitate a first date between two strangers in the podcast studio, and I act as like a third wheel, fly in the wall, and I try to bring it on in the podcast studio. It's pretty fun.
How do you get on the podcast? How do you get these people to come on and go on a first date?
Friends of friends. Like, literally anybody can go on. And it's been fun to see like how people act during like a first date that I control.
And so how do you match them up? Do you kind of...
I wing it, usually, most of the time. Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to know the person beforehand?
Not really. Sometimes I'll have my friends go on, but I feel like the best kind of relationships are the ones you don't expect. So I like to put people in a room together and just let it all hang loose and just go for it.
And sometimes it works.
Yeah, it does.
Have you had any success yet?
We've had some people who've gone on multiple dates afterwards.
Nice.
I'm not sure if there's any commitment going on yet,
right?
But I think it's a pretty high percentage.
That's what season two is for. You can follow up with all the guests.
Yes, season two. I really want to be an officiant for a wedding. Is that what it is? Officiate?
You'd like to officiate a wedding.
I'd like to officiate a wedding. I think that'd be kind of cool.
And that would be a wedding of two people that met on Down to Date.
Hopefully.
That's what you're striving
for. I'll accept any other wedding.
See, I think you should do like a smaller version of Bachelor. Like, you bring two people in that don't know each other, that you've done no research on, and they either get engaged by the time the podcast ends or they go their separate ways. There's no in between.
Can I also add to this, this brainstorming session?
Yeah, bring it on.
Maybe bring in one guy and then bring in like four girls all on the mics. And every 10 minutes, the guy eliminates one girl until there's one girl left.
So savage.
It's pretty savage, but that's the nature of the game.
That's true. Like almost like a blind dating kind of podcast.
It would be like
situation.
The Hunger Games of podcasting.
Again, we're not telling you how to run your podcast here.
No, but I like these ideas. Keep them coming. I'll steal all of them, give you no credit.
We should do this on Help I Suck at Dating one episode.
Well, yeah. Okay, maybe on second thought. So wait, and then beyond the podcast, you just got a dog.
I did. He's a little weenie. Little weenie dog.
He's about 6 inches or?
About 6 inches. His name is Pistachio on a good day. And he's great. He's like a cuddler. He'll cuddle me like every night. And, he hates everybody else but me. So it's perfect. Really.
What made you want to get a dog?
I've always wanted to rescue, and I've fostered a lot of dogs. So I felt like I really wanted to like make the commitment of actually like saving a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it always breaks your heart to have to leave them. So I figured, why not? Let's go for it.
Then you just picked this one. So with the rescue, how did it go about?
So I rescued from Bunny's Buddies, which a lot of people are familiar with. And they sent me kind of a grainy photo of him, and they said he was going to die in 2 days. And I was like, I will save you.
Like euthanized?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can't say no to that. So,
no.
You know, I'm glad that I didn't. And so, a month later, they flew him to America, and he is now an American pup.
Where is he from?
He's from South Korea.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
Oh, and what's his name again?
Pistachio. He's a little nutty.
I've got a real soft spot for dachshunds. When I was a kid, we had a miniature long-haired dachshund.
Oh, I heard the long-haired ones are a little feisty.
She was really yappy.
Yeah.
But just ever since having her name was Soubrette, I've always had a soft spot for them. My roommate hates dachshunds. Like, if he dates a girl and it ends up she has a dachshund, he, like, immediately severs all ties of communication.
Oh, I mean...
Seems strong.
Yeah.
Well, dachshunds are they're fiercely loyal. And, like, highlighting on the fierce part. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he has been abused in previous homes. So I feel like he has a distrust for humans, but he loves other dogs. So just perfect.
Yeah.
How can you not like other dogs?
How is he with Joe?
At first he was a little bit hesitant to warm up, but then he did really well. Now he does really well.
Nice. Well, how'd he take to you?
Automatically, he loved me.
It
just makes me feel a lot better about who I am. You know, like when a dog doesn't like you, you take it personally.
Yeah.
The fact that he just automatically loved me and imprinted on me right away makes me feel really great.
So you agreed to adopt Pistachio before you'd even ever met him?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And well, let's say for obviously worst case scenario, they bring him to America and then for whatever reason it doesn't work out with you and him, then would you bring it to a foster shelter here in Los Angeles?
For me, that wasn't ever an option.
Yeah.
I feel like once you commit to a life, you have to just dedicate, you know? So for me, I was like, right now he's through training. He had his first training class today.
Nice.
He got so many little hot dogs. He's very, very proud of him. We're getting better. I mean, he definitely has a lot of behavioral issues he has to work out, but I'm along for the long ride, you know?
to bounce off your idea about once you commit to a life, my sister and her husband rescued a dog, and he had a heart murmur, which was, we found out as soon as they got, I think from a breeder, I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was a breeder rescue, I can't remember. But they found out they had a heart murmur, but it was a very low level one, wasn't going to cause any health issues. 2 weeks later, they brought him to the vet, found out it was the worst level heart murmur you could possibly have as a dog.
Okay.
And the dog would live only till 6 months unless they have heart surgery, which would have cost them $6,000. They found this out 2 weeks after they got the dog.
Where's my checkbook?
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, they had to have the conversation. Do we go forward with this and spend this kind of money to save the dog? Or after 2 weeks, do we, you know, give them away and get another one? And of course they paid the $6,000, and now Boson is a very healthy, long living dog.
You wouldn't have told that story if they didn't pay the $6,000.
Absolutely not. Everybody knew where this story was going.
Yeah.
You think I was going to end that story? Be like, yeah. So they gave him the dog, and the dog's probably dead now.
Yeah.
And then they went out and got
but now they have a healthy little Bichon, named Rascal. That would have been a dark turn to say the least.
It would have been.
My brother's got a wing too. By the way, before we move on, I want to show Kendall this real quick. So Kendall reached out to me after my surgery and gave me a bit of advice, and I went out and took the advice.
Oh my gosh, are you reading it?
I have not cracked it yet.
Okay, well.
You know, the original plan was to read about 100 pages of this book. Kendall recommended to get the book.
It's such a great book.
What's the name? What's the name of it?
This book will blow your mind. Journeys at the Extremes of Science.
It's an amazing, amazing book. It definitely does blow your mind.
Why did you recommend it?
Because it's one of those things that kind of takes you away from your current situation.
What is it about?
Well, it's about mind-blowing things, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. It's basically about things that happen in like the real world that you can't believe happen. It's just so like mind-blowing.
Hmm.
So a lot about like space, a lot about just like how we see color, just in general, like things we take for granted every day.
That's the kind
how
of
we see color. Is that the kind of thing like what my blue is could be your red?
No,
I've heard this before.
I don't necessarily believe in that. I feel like, okay, so our eyes are so limited in the sense that we can only see a certain amount of colors because of the amount of cones that we have. So if you look at like a mantis shrimp, they have like 23 cones. So they can see like 2,000,000,000 bazillion colors compared to how many colors we can see. So that kind of stuff blows your mind.
So if somebody's colorblind, do they only have two cones?
So there's two different kinds of colorblind. So there's one color, it's like become like a science podcast. It's great.
Love it. You're so knowledgeable.
So there's one kind of colorblind where you have a lack of cones, and usually men are the ones that have that kind of colorblind symptom because they have one less chromosome, than women. But then there's another one where you're retina, it crosses, so it blends colors. So those are the ones where you see people putting on those glasses and they're like, oh wow, I can see colors now, you know. So there's just, so it depends.
Interesting.
But there's been like studies where they've like injected like red cones into like chimpanzees' eyes, and the chimpanzee can actually like start seeing like red. So it's pretty fascinating.
The crazy thing to think about that, and sorry, we'll move on.
Tracy McMillan is here, and she's ready to go.
We're going
to
bring her in. Before we do that, though, I do want to say the crazy thing to think about, to your point, you said mantis shrimp have 10x more cones in their eyes than we do. It's like it's colors that we can't even fathom what they are, right? What would it be?
So their rainbow is like extra thick.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know? It's usually like variants of the same colors. I mean, I guess it's like the best that we can do is like variants of the same colors we can see, but like different kinds of magenta or different, you know. Hmm. So,
well, we'll talk about more of that maybe off air.
Yeah.
Anyways, next up we have Dr. Tracy McMillan coming in, and we are going to dive into a little bit about her and what she has to offer for our Suck Army.
She has a lot of thoughts, actually. She says that men are way more into relationships than women in terms of commitment.
That's false.
She says that you should have the baby before you get married.
That's good.
She's pro arranged marriages.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, she has a lot of interesting thoughts that we need to get into with her.
She was on Oprah. I feel like that's
and that's impressive as well.
That was super impressive.
Point is, you're not going to want to miss it. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, Suck Army, to Help I Suck at Dating. We have a very special guest who is in studio with us right now. She is a television writer, relationship expert, and author of 3 books, including Why You're Not Married Yet. And her TED Talk, The Person You Really Need to Marry, has more than 12 million views. It is Dr. Tracy McMillan.
Woo!
Except I'm not a doctor.
We're going to call you doctor anyway.
Yeah, people do. People on Twitter.
It says right there on the front page, Dr. Tracy McMillan.
People on Twitter decided I was a doctor.
We're doubling down on
this. Over the weekend.
Just accept it.
Doctor, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
If somebody called me a doctor, I am Dr. Jared Haben, MD, on whatever you think I practiced.
All right.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I love being here.
Oh, of course. So, actually, Mark was expressing some of your views before you came in. Which I think the audience would love to know more about. One example is men are way more committed to relationships.
Okay. Well, okay. That's probably a little bit simplified, oversimplified. So here's the thing.
That's what we do here. Help us.
That's okay. That's okay. So one of the things about, for example, women file for divorce 70% of the time.
Mm.
Women are the people who file for divorce. So you got to wonder, why is that? I think part of the reason is that when women are unhappy in a marriage or a relationship, because it kind of goes for a relationship, they're way more unhappy than when a man is unhappy in a marriage. Because, like, dudes can compartmentalize in ways that women either cannot, will not. And also, there's a lot of research about how when men are committed to the relationship and open to being what's called influenced by their wives, this would go for the girlfriends too, the relationship is much happier. Now, it doesn't work the other way.
I need more explanation on that, I think.
Okay. Yeah, my idea would be that guys are, and I'm speaking as a guy, so I can say this.
Okay.
You know, we might be a little stubborn.
Whoa.
Maybe a little dumb at times. So I think guys are just... I think also a lot of relationships that I've seen, women are the ones who are not afraid to speak about their emotion.
True.
And where a guy will just, if something's wrong, he'll just handle
compartmentalize.
Compartmentalize and not want to deal with the situation.
That's right. Women, well, this is all research. Women are the people who bring up problems in a relationship, like much more than men do. So I think the thing about being influenced, what it means is this, to explain, Dean.
Please.
So basically, to be influenced means you listen to your partner, you take in what they say, and you allow yourself to be changed by it, as opposed to just, oh, there's words raining down on my ears, and nothing is going to change in my heart or in my behavior. So when a man is open to being influenced by his wife or girlfriend, those couples report a much higher satisfaction in their relationships. Now, when women are open to being influenced by man, it doesn't change the outcome of the happiness quotient. It's really a guy thing, because I think it works the other way. When a guy is not open to being influenced in his relationship, it makes a lot of unhappiness. Very unhappy partners.
And when you say influence, what do you mean influence on what? Like in what
to
aspect?
Be taking in what they're hearing, to be moved by what they're hearing, to be willing to change, learn,
but is
grow.
This, does it cover the gambit? Like change emotionally,
anything.
Change physically, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so if you say, okay, for example, in one of my marriages, because guys, you know I've been married a lot, right?
Okay.
How many times?
3 times.
Okay.
Judging by your math, I'm just going to crunch the numbers real quick.
Yeah.
You filed for divorce twice out of those 3 times.
And all 3 times.
I looked down in your hand. I didn't see a ring. So I was like, I think it's 3 times, Dean.
No, but the thing about it is that even the 3rd time, he was like iffy. But he would have stayed married. See, he was okay to have... Do we swear on this show?
Yeah, swear.
Yeah.
Okay, he was okay to have bullshit going on and be married. He was just like, why do you have to leave? It's just bullshit. And I'm like, no, because I don't do bullshit.
Do you think it's because maybe men sometimes are better at like distracting themselves too?
Yeah, that's to me the compartmentalizing thing. Yeah. It didn't mean he didn't want me. It just meant he was very confused and wanted to be able to go to dinner with other women and maybe date them.
Yeah.
Wait, this guy?
I call that cheating.
Sure.
That's what I said to him.
Absolutely.
He's like, but why? He more wanted to probably have something very non-traditional.
Yeah.
Was this your 3rd marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My first 2 husbands were super sane, super solid, and I was the one who wasn't ready.
So can I ask you why keep getting married again?
Well, it wasn't exactly like that. So the first time it was the 80s. So I was 19 Okay, guys.
I love how people use that as an explanation.
No.
It brings so much joy to my heart. Be like, it was the 80s.
Everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
It's what happened.
It's true.
I love it.
And I'm from Minnesota. So it's absolutely what people were going to do right then. Is be like, we've been together 2.5 years. We're getting married. It's the next obvious step here. Never mind, I'm a teenager, but whatever. A lot of my high school friends are still married to their high school sweethearts, so it can work.
Do you think they're miserable?
Actually, I think most of them are not miserable.
Oh, that's good.
And sometimes this other friend of mine will be like, are they really happy? I'm like, I think they are.
Nice.
Do you think there was a time when they were miserable?
No, I think we're about to step into another whole topic around attachment and secure attachment. And I think securely attached people enjoy being in a relationship. It's no big deal. But they pair up very young and then they're out of the dating pool.
Hmm. All right. Well, so your first marriage was in the 80s.
Yeah.
What happened with the second one?
The second time I was pregnant. And that was in the 90s. So there were 13 years between my first and my second marriage. So when you say, why keep getting married? I'm like, well, that was a long time in between. And then there was my next marriage was in 2005. So that was 96 to 2005. I suck at math, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then
how long were you married? 14 years ago
since I was married.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you look so young. That's why I was like, you look great.
I just look good.
You missed the 20 teens. You would have hit it every decade had you hit the 20 teens.
I know. Well, we're not done yet. Are we? Oh, yeah.
No, we're 2020. Yeah.
That's okay. I've learned. I don't need to. I do want to get married again. I do. I mean, but not for just cause.
Right.
It has to be right.
I'm curious to hear what Kendall thinks about all this, because you have some interesting ideas when you say the baby before getting married, the person.
Potentially. Yeah. Here's what I want to do. I want to open your guys' minds to other ways to be in a relationship that isn't the bachelor, because that only works for some people.
For a small amount of people.
I would say. My example is always like a home perm. It's like a home perm, one third of the people are going to get nothing. One third of the people are going to get perfect curls. And one third of the people are going to be like, they stuck their finger in a socket. And I feel like the traditional idea of like, we got married, we were 24, whatever. That works for one third of the people. And then there's everybody else. And so I'm trying to go, what if you're in the other 66%? Let's talk.
Yeah. No, it's a fair
question.
Let's
get creative.
I think part of me agrees that usually it's the female that gets restless in a relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because you had mentioned before that you are interested or you support like arranged marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, I'm going to use that word loosely.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there's a lot of research on arranged marriages that they're actually very happy. They are happy marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm always looking for the whys. When I read this stuff, I'm like, why is that? I'm going to say, number one, it's probably because people, when they get romantic, like that romantic thing that happens where you're just like turned on and like, woo, fired up, that is actually unresolved trauma, emotional stuff, childhood stuff, generational stuff coming to the surface. Being activated.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that exciting, fearful feeling is. So when somebody arranges a marriage, they're not choosing out of that. They're choosing out of like, you're this and you're this and like, this should work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not the expectation that this person is going to make me happy. The expectation is we're going to build a life.
Yeah, I can agree. I think the advent of dating apps and stuff like that, it's like the power of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point is the power of choice debilitating? You know?
Oh my gosh.
So
Pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, about
I
5 minutes into swiping, you're like, this
so
sucks.
So true. And I feel like that's why dating is so like short, you know, so quick. It's like a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I'm speaking for Los Angeles because I feel like there's always something else that's shiny.
Yeah.
And so the idea of you're committed to this, you're in this, make it work or find a way to find happiness
in
it is kind of something that,
yes. You
know, it sounds kind of cool.
Well, it's a lot less about like, thumbs up, thumbs down. I like that. I don't like that. It's just so much less about which way the wind is blowing emotionally or inside of you. Because like we change a lot of times. I would say the idea of arranging a marriage, like I see a lot of couples who got married because it was time.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And people say that's a bad thing, but I'm kind of like not so sure. I'm like, mm-hmm. maybe that's okay.
It's a good thing for people to get married when it's time?
No, I'm saying it's an option that you could just choose somebody who's like appropriate, that you get along with, that you could, and I'm saying all the ways they arrange a marriage, the same set of criteria, and that you come into it not with the idea like, this is going to be the most passionate, oh my God, thing. You come into it like, we're going to build a life together.
Well, I think people forget with marriages and relationships that this person, yes, you'll be spending the rest of your life with, but you're also going to be spending every day with.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, there has to be more than just the romance. You're going to have a conversation with this person every day for the rest of your life,
right?
Hopefully, as long as it works. And you have to factor that in when you're choosing who you want to hopefully spend the rest of your life
with.
I saw a study, I just looked it up, about arranged marriages. Mm-hmm. And it says, according to a 2012 study by Statistic Brain, take that as
we're
you will,
there.
53% of marriages are arranged worldwide. The global divorce rate for arranged marriages is 6.3%.
I got to say,
which is pretty low, but also we also
pretty
understand.
Pretty low. It's crazy low, yeah.
But we also understand that maybe there's probably a lot of different factors mm-hmm. into why arranged marriages stay married.
Sure. I'm on the other side. I disagree with the arranged marriage things.
Mm-hmm.
Explain.
I think it's like fringe territory of human trafficking. It's mm-hmm. kind of like pseudo in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason, in my opinion, again, I could be wrong, it's just right. an opinion, that the divorce rate is lower is because the only reason they're doing it is to fulfill their family's wishes, their mother, their right. father, whatever it is. And
which
so
is
that's
going
to stop them from getting divorced as well.
Well, I'm not suggesting your mom and dad set you up. I'm suggesting you find a marriage that is appropriate, that you're not choosing from the bachelor criteria.
Yeah.
You're choosing from these other criteria that are more like building a life with someone.
Yeah.
And I also want to say, I'm not saying I'm in favor of arranged marriages. I was just bringing up the stat
yeah.
for context, people.
Right.
But I agree with you there, because sometimes when I look at The Bachelor, now that being in a relationship for, a couple of years after being friends with my wife for so long and now being married, you do realize that while you're watching the show, and I understand that those feelings are real because I was there in mm-hmm. their spot at one point, as we all were. And the feelings are real, but what they don't know in the moment is that relationship right there in that bubble, mm-hmm. you're going to have to take back into the real world mm-hmm. and develop and strengthen and choose mm-hmm. each other every day and
exactly.
incorporate each other into each other's lives, both with families, location, work, goals. Because sure, there's probably a lot of things that you guys have in common when you're talking mm-hmm. and having conversations, but I guarantee you there's a lot of other things that you don't have in common that you're
right.
not even thinking about that a year and a half down the road,
right.
you're going to realize could cause, some issues in the relationship.
So what we're talking about is, what is the quality of that first 9 to 18 months going to be like? Is it going to be like super hot, or is it going to be like, okay, I think I met somebody I can really work with? So that's really what we're talking about. Because what you're saying is, after the 18 months, the work is the same. It's about choosing each other every day. It's about, so we're talking about a quality of the hot part. Because the hot part cools off pretty much for everybody.
I guess, like, because the bachelor world is such a fantasy in a lot of ways,
exactly.
it tears you out of your normal life.
Yes.
And it puts you in like this world where anything is possible. And
right.
When that starts to become a challenge, then that's where the real decisions happen.
Yes. And I think that the falling in love period mirrors that fantasy period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now that I've been in relationships as many as I've been in, in the falling in love period, I just say to the person, guess what? This is going to wear off. Like, do not think this is going to maintain, because it's not.
How long do we think it's supposed to last?
Well, there's actually a lot of brain chemistry on this. It's like, anywhere between 9 to 15 months.
Okay.
You know, 6 to 12, like somewhere in there.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because it makes you think, were we built to be monogamous and to have like these long lasting relationships, or were we built to have, that quick, fiery passion, have a baby, move on?
Mm-hmm. I think we are built for all of it. I go to the home perm thing.
Yeah.
Some people are built for multiple partners. Some people are built for one partner. Some people could go either way, depending on circumstances. And if you were having a tribe of like 150 people, which is how we used to live, you'd want some of each.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want everybody getting married 100 times. And you don't want everybody doing that. But it would be good for, keeping things not just interesting, but, well, it's more like the variety that you would get, the genetic variety that you would get because some people run over to the other tribe and go get somebody. You know what I mean? Like, the variety that you would get would be good for the species. Like, we are animals and we evolved.
Jared made a good point, I think, near the end of December, end of November, one of those episodes. You said that, and correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, you said humans and... in your opinion, aren't inherently monogamous, but you make the choice to be every single day.
Yeah, and I find that more romantic. I think in our society, a lot of people just believe or want to believe that you're destined to be with one person, and you know, you find your soulmate. I believe that there is a type of person for me that I connect with more than others. Mm-hmm. So if you want to say that type of person is my soulmate, sure, but I'm not sure if that really narrows it down to one person.
Yeah.
And so, like, with my wife, her and I choose each other every day, and we're gonna have to continue doing that every day in order to have a successful marriage. And that's something that I try not to forget about. And I try to remind myself, because I think a lot of times in relationships, people back out too easily because they think, well, if it's hard here, then this person's not meant for me.
Right.
And I've said it a million times on this podcast, but like I said, if something gets difficult and they choose to go the other way, and they're like, well, it just didn't work out because, you know, that was really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I got news for you. Mm-hmm. Whatever relationship you're in, there's going to be a lot of difficult times,
right,
and you're going to have to work at it. And so really what it comes down to is either you choose to be with this person or you don't.
You can choose to do work or you don't.
Exactly.
Some people just hold the beach ball underwater, though. And then they're like, we're getting along. Look at us. But they just don't ever open the closets. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't ever have the conversations, the hard conversations.
It's a numb way to go through life, right?
100%.
I feel that there's been like certain studies with lizards that show that some are built to be monogamous while others are more polyamorous.
Exactly.
So there's like proteins that are built in the DNA. And I think they find that in humans as well. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I feel, because I'm very scientifically minded, that humans are either born monogamous or born polyamorous.
Yeah.
And then you have to, like, societally live up to that.
And I'm going to say there's probably, okay, so if we're going to the genetic thing, it would be, like, there's probably some things that are, you know, like eye color, where it can be not just blue or black, but it could be in half.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably people, because I feel, sometimes I think of it as hunters and farmers. And, like, I'm a huntmer, okay?
Yeah.
Like, I'm part hunter, for sure. Obviously, I've been married 3 times. I've been in 11 relationships, and I sometimes joke that I'm going to be lying on my deathbed holding the hand of my new boyfriend, you know, but I really don't want that. But once I need to be monogamous inside of a relationship, and I do not want to have casual sex. I've never wanted to have casual sex. I never had a one night stand. I do not want to have a one night stand. So I feel like I'm both of those things, you know, but then how long do I stay? My longest is like almost 6 years. But then if you go to my relationship with my kid's dad, we just talked today, and our kid's 22, and we still get along, but we started out as coworkers.
So yeah.
And we still are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like the coworker relationship was a perfect building block for family. It was like we make decisions together. We are very functional together. I mean, was it super passionate? No. If it were 1937, would that be a great marriage? Sure. But we're not in 1937. We're in 2020. And, like, people want to have, you know, self-actualization through their relationships. We want to capture, like, something spiritual through our relationships.
You also have a longer life expectancy.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel like it, because life is so much longer, there's so much more room for things to go wrong, for things to be upsetting in a relationship.
And that's also true. To do it in different ways. That's also why I want to just put it out there. Like, we need to invent some new ways to structure relationships, you know, and that's where it comes in, where it's like, maybe you have the baby with somebody who's great that you can work with,
right. But
you don't necessarily imagine that this is going to be where you're going to partner.
Yeah.
You can partner in a family, but that doesn't mean that's not the same as a romantic partnership.
Interesting.
I'm just...
There's a lot of different ways to look at it, too, I think. You know?
I had a question because we talked about two separate things. Mm-hmm. One, like you said, holding the beach ball underwater and not having those difficult conversations. So I guess for people listening out there that might be going through a difficult time in their relationship, how far is too far?
Because
I...
Question.
I say, you know, you have to still be willing to fight for the relationship, do what you guys need to do, whether mm-hmm. that be go to therapy, talk more, be more romantic, put each other first, so on and so forth, or go the other side, you know, when do you know enough yeah. is enough and it's time for you to move on?
I'm going to say, I'm going to the attachment thing now. If the relationship is not secure functioning, what we would call secure functioning. So a secure functioning relationship, it's like it works on a basic level. And so when I'm in a relationship that doesn't have secure functioning, right, that's when I leave. So what you're describing where each of you, you negotiate things, you're each choosing it every day. There's this, you have basic trust, you know, and when I say basic trust, I mean like you trust each other. Because see, here's the thing. We are primates. We come in. Our brain is too big. We get born too early and we have this intense period of dependency on our caretakers for the first year or two, really 10 of life.
Or but 30.
Could be, but for sure for the first year. So what that means is we evolved to need to attach. That is number one. It's even more important than food, right? So we attach to our mother. That becomes our primary attachment. Whatever that is, that thing is what we map love relationships onto later. So the thing is when you're meeting somebody and you're falling in love, you're just doing bonding and attachment. Okay. So some people attach in ways that are insecure. They don't feel safe. It's like their mom doesn't come when they cry. You know what I mean? Like they're in distress a lot. The partner doesn't know how to calm them down. These are the things I'm talking about. So if you're in a relationship that's hard, but it's hard in a way where you never feel safe, you feel like you're very upset all the time. You have cortisol going all the time. Every day there's arguing. It's uncertain. That's when you want to go. Now, if it's hard, like, oh, wow, I'm really having to confront myself. I'm really having to do this, you know, hard work of making this choice one day at a time and growing emotionally and, you know, being honest on a whole new level and dealing with shame and all the things that come up in a relationship. That's not the kind of hard you leave, you know? So there's different kinds of hard.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, I think. What do you think?
I think it makes perfect sense. It's just so hard to know. And I guess in life, you never truly know.
No, I'm going to say you do know because your body's going
to
tell you.
I agree. And the way that she described it makes it sound like it's easier to know because I've been in those relationships before where I was always on edge. I always had this anxiety coursing through my body, the cortisol that you said.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the relationship that I'm in now, I don't feel that same way.
That's what it is.
I agree. And I can see why maybe like in the moment, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what's causing the anxiety or whatever it is. But then once you remove yourself from that relationship, it's better.
And you don't miss it. Even if you love the person, the sex was so great, you're like, oh, yeah. Thank God 100%. That's over.
See, you know? I was in a different scenario. Granted, this was in my younger 20s to mid-20s. But I was in a situation where I ended it with a girl who is incredible. And because she was my first girlfriend. She mm-hmm. was, you know, the first everything. And so I was like, I need to kind of figure out myself and move on, blah, 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 blah. And then months went by and I was like, I am an idiot. And so mm-hmm. I from then on, I always thought that I didn't fight hard enough for the relationship because that's what we kind of were talking about, that I wasn't willing to really fight for. And I thought looking back on it in the moment, no, granted, it all worked out because I found the person I wanted to be with the rest of my life. But at the moment, I was like, she was absolutely right.
Right.
I ended it too early where I should have fought more.
Yes.
And so that's why I come from the standpoint of like, I think my gut was telling me one thing, but maybe it was wrong. Or two, what we talked about on the podcast, not Dean, you weren't here, but we talked about listening to your gut, but sometimes what happens is when your gut speaks to you, you let it go to your head,
mm-hmm.
and then all these other factors start coming into what should be just a gut decision, but now you start overthinking it, and then you can't tell what your gut is actually telling you versus what it is telling you. And so I think maybe I fall into that.
But you're
category.
Not describing that you were in cortisol all the time. You're describing actually it was a secure functioning relationship. You just weren't ready. So you weren't. I'm talking about when the couple is like, you know what I'm talking, Dean, I think you haven't been in a relationship like that. You're in a secure functioning relationship and you were in other secure functioning. And so you're kind of like insecure people. Secure people are like, what do you, I don't care.
I was going to say, I bet you because he's a secure attachment style.
I know.
As an avoidant attachment style, oh, yeah. I've been in plenty of cortisol driven relationships.
Especially if you're with the anxious. And the anxious and the avoidant find each other.
They do, yeah, absolutely.
But anxious is, avoidant to avoidant is very stable, but it's dry.
I feel like I was in an avoiding relationship. Like most of my relationships, I let it get to a certain point and then I jump ship and come up with some excuse. And it almost takes fighting through that, going over that hill 100%. To realize how you would be in like a new kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. Like it completely shifts.
Yeah.
What do you mean by dry?
Well, it's like not a moist, yummy, delicious, juicy relationship. It's
not
a relationship that works where you're not getting triggered. Because see, the reason in a person I'm not going to say these are hard and fast definitions. I'm going to say it's more spectrum-y. So let's say there's avoidance from 1 to 100 and at different points of your life and with different people. Because if you're with somebody who's a 98 avoidant and you're a 74 avoidant, you're going to start to look really anxious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're just outdoing you in it. But so let's say you're in a spectrum and you've got you're on the avoidant side a little bit more. That person auto-regulates. That person solves problems by going and being alone and by watching TV or doing something alone with themselves, playing a video game, smoking pot, like whatever. They're going to go away from the relationship to try to calm down and restore equilibrium.
That's what I do. Is that bad?
Well, it's a style.
Okay.
See, that's what I do too, but I would also argue that, like you said, I'm a secure...
You are, but I know because you don't do it to the same degree that Dean's going to do it. Dean's going to do it where the girlfriend's going to be like, this isn't working. Yeah. And she's going to start giving a lot of problems.
For me, it's like, I'm going to go down to the coffee shop down the street for a little while. Dean's like, I'm going to go to Europe for a little while. So just wait for me.
Exactly. That's why I said it's like a spectrum. I can already feel that you're on the secure side. It's a tone. Now I know it when I encounter it, right? And then if you know who you are, you know when your stuff wakes up. Okay, so one of the ideas is that if you're on the anxious side, part of why you're anxious is about the way your mom, we'll just call her mom, but whoever your primary attachment person was, how they interacted with you. So if you're anxious, you're anxious because it was intermittent. So sometimes they were there and sometimes they weren't. Well, when they were there and you're like in the crib and they're coming and they're going to meet your needs and you're like, oh my God, my needs are getting met. I'm so excited. That's what it's called somatic markers, right? You build little moments in your body, markers, miles, like little signposts that are like around excitement. So when you meet that avoidant, boom, the somatic markers get activated and you're like, mommy, you know, you don't know that. You think he's hot. And when you meet a secure person, you're like, I'm not feeling it. And you move on to the next, you go find the next avoidant or the next anxious or whatever type of insecure attachment, because that's what you match with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it depends what kind of stimulation you need as well. Like, so I think maybe if you need more stimulation, because I feel like when I'm in a relationship, I need like constant stimulation or I start to feel stagnant. And that's when I'm like, this water isn't moving. I need to like jump to like a different ship.
Yes, I get that. But I'm going to say the attachment is the cause of the stimulation need level rather than the result.
Oh, interesting.
Kendall, why do you think you're an avoidant?
I think I'm just comfortable doing my own thing. And I feel like if you're comfortable in yourself, you don't necessarily need a relationship to fulfill that within you. I have a great family. I have great friends. I feel like I'm okay on my own. But then again, I love like the physical attachment of like having like a partner and sharing
that space.
Well,
one of the things about the avoidant is that they tend to go in, get their needs met, and withdraw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're kind of like, I'm going to just get my needs met here. And then the anxious person more wants to enmesh or be together all the time. The secure person, like, they're just like, I like it both ways. And you're like, what?
Yeah, I'm pretty easygoing.
I don't even know you people. I love it, though. See, that's my dream. Somebody asked me, I was at a party. They're like, so what are you looking for in a man? I'm like, secure attachment. Mm. But I know that's going to be very challenging for me. Like, if you give me secure attachment, all kinds of things are going to happen for me. Because it really goes, now you start getting into some of the more, because the attachment is more baseline. That's like scientific. Then you've got the stuff that results from that, like the intimacy issues, which are more, it's scary. Intimacy is scary for everyone but the secures.
Hmm. Why is that?
Because an avoidant is going to feel engulfed by intimacy. They're going to be like, oh my God, because that's what it was. Oftentimes an avoidant is because there was a primary attachment person was consistently not able to respond. Mm. I love your mom. We're not trying to say anything bad. It's a joke. But like my first question was, where are you in the birth order?
I'm the first. Well, I'm a twin, so 3 seconds first. So as much as that counts.
I think twins are a special case too, because a lot of times I think your primary attachment is to the twin.
Yeah. I mean, we've had each other through every single second. So it's almost like I have the love of my life already.
Yes.
You know, the other person's just a bonus, but not to belittle my relationships at all. But I mean,
you're being real.
Yeah. It's just, I think a lot of relationships that I've been in, they freak out.
I'm sure.
Because they're like, oh my gosh, why do you not need me the way that I need you?
Right.
And I'm like, well,
do you attract anxious?
I attract, yeah.
So here's anxious regulates with other people. So if you're in a fight, okay, let's say there's a conflict in a relationship. The avoidant is going to go off and be like, I'm going to go watch the game or I'm going to go to Europe in your case. The anxious is going to want to work it out right then and there. And if they can't work it out with you, they'll go to their friends. But they can't work it out all by themselves in a room.
I feel like I'm a mix in that way because I tend to want to talk through things. Mm-hmm. I don't like to let things rest because then it changes what you're actually... there's nothing like being fresh and like a talk.
That's true. And avoidants do not like conflict. They want to get it over with really fast. They're like, let's just get through this and move forward because they do not want to stay stuck in it, where the anxious can much more get mired down in that.
I feel like I've never felt more seen than whenever I listen to you talk.
Okay. Well, and that's really interesting. And that feels so good for an avoidant until maybe 5 or 6 months into the relationship when you're like, stop looking at me.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of things you say really do make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we do have to wrap up.
No.
I know.
I just started.
I feel like we could talk to you all day long, honestly.
I mean... Yeah. We didn't even talk about dating. Well, we did. This is all dating.
It's all dating, yeah. And hopefully we can get you back at some point.
Oh,
and talk
anytime.
About it,
I just live down the street. You can see my house.
Oh, perfect. before we part ways, you're working on something now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's called Family or Fiance.
That's right. Let's
hear
about that.
It's on OWN. It's a reality show about couples who want to get married. They're engaged, and the families are against it. And we move the whole gang into a house in Malibu. And basically, it goes down. In the most beautiful way. And oftentimes, nobody's prepared for the amount of healing and growth that happens on this show.
Nice.
And there's nothing... Everybody there has problems either you have, your friends have, your family has. Like, it's so relatable. It's so moving. You laugh, you cry. I love it.
And how do we find it?
It's on OWN, so you have to, like, check your cable provider or whoever your satellite people are. Or you can get the app.
Great.
Oprah Winfrey Network.
OWN. Perfect. Yeah. Well... thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
thank you,
for
this
having
is awesome.
Me.
Yes, thank you so much.
You guys are starting a rumor.
Coming up, we have one more segment. We're going to answer a couple emails and then say see you later. We are back, and listening to that tone, it made me realize that at the top of this episode, I was like, Dean, plug the email a couple times throughout this entire episode. I haven't done it once. We love your listener emails, so email us, isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. We have one email today from Hannah. I'm going to have Mark read it for us.
Well, I'd be happy to.
And the three of us hopefully will be able to dissect it a little bit.
You know, I think this is something that a lot of people deal with, and so I thought it was a good one for us to discuss.
Great.
My name is Hannah. I'm 22 years old and single for 2 years. I've only been in one relationship, and it was from being a freshman in high school till a sophomore in college. So I know I'm young, but it was a good 5 years of my early adult life. I'm finally ready to date again, and it would be really nice to have someone to share the good things in life with. I've tried all the dating apps. I've met some guys through mutual friends. It's always good, the first couple of dates, and then we have the talk. And guys always want something more casual, more of a friends with benefits type scenario. Shortly after, I'm always ghosted. Should I try to date guys a little older than me because they're more mature? What age is too old to date? Help, I suck at dating. By the way, I love the podcast. I listen every week.
Well, Hannah, first and foremost, thank you so much for being a part of Suck Army. We love that more than anything.
Whoop.
Where's the sound effect?
Help
Here we
I
go.
Suck at dating.
There it is. There it is. There it
Help
is.
Help, I suck at dating.
I'm going to lob this one over to Kendall because I think she's going to have some great insight on this.
Thank you. I feel like it's a very American thing to have the talk about, are we monogamous? What's going on? And I see that as like a sense of you're not really being who you were in the beginning of the relationship. You're all of a sudden becoming somebody that, I mean, yes, there's strength and vulnerability, but I think that doing something maybe during date one or date two, it's not the correct time to have that talk, mm-hmm. and it might be scaring people away. I always feel like it's better to wait until you are in like a really emotionally secure place with someone that you're dating before having any sort of serious, scary conversation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a friend who's going through this currently, and they had just texted, you know, the guy that they're seeing, trying to talk about monogamy, trying to talk about, are you dating anyone else? And, it, you know, in the beginning of a relationship, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be stress-free. No one wants to be put on the spot. So I feel like don't just avoid it. Why are you even trying to be, you know, thinking about that right now? Just enjoy the beginning of a relationship for like the passion that it is, for the discovery that it is. And there's ways to ask questions that don't directly put someone on the spot.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing is that probably Hannah and maybe some other girls too, they just want to know if this guy's sleeping with other people. And might be afraid. I'm being dead serious though, because then you get into like other stuff. And I'm curious if they want to know like, hey, are you sleeping with other people or not? Because that's an awkward question to ask, to be like, hey, is it just me? Or so I think maybe they ask without asking, to be like, oh, is it just us? Are we seeing other people?
I mean, I agree with that. You want to be safe. You don't want to be with someone who's sleeping with a bunch of different people.
Yeah, if you're sleeping with like three girls a night, you know?
But I also feel like there's a lot to be said about developing trust very early on in a relationship and not trying to peg someone down. Yeah. I think that if the person is going to meet you and you're developing a really strong relationship and they're going to go off and sleep with other people, maybe that's not the kind of person you want to attract into your life. And if that's something they're thinking about early on, it's something they're going to be thinking about later on in the relationship.
I love the answer you gave, for the fact that I think it's correct, but it's not the answer that I wanted to give. And so I think that yours might be more right than mine.
Well, what answer did you want to get? I'm curious.
And so I just wanted to let you know that I think that your answer was the best answer between the three of us.
But what's your answer?
I'm curious.
My answer is just that she should date older. Because when I look back to me, when I was dating as a 22-year-old, I was dating other 22-year-olds. I was that guy that would run away at the idea of a relationship. But then when I turned 28, at a certain point, I just hit a point where I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to be in a relationship now. And I'm going to be the best damn boyfriend I can possibly be. So I think that there is something in a guy's head that eventually flips over to the other side. And maybe dating older for her would be beneficial in that sense, because it sounds like she does want a relationship. And if you are seeking out a relationship and not necessarily looking for like that fun, spicy beginning stage, be it as it may, then maybe go date older.
Well, so how old?
Well,
she's 22.
I'm 28. My girlfriend's 24. So I don't see like you could go 26, 27.
I look late 20s a little bit.
I would say late 20s. Yeah.
I agree with you. I think guys really take a long time to develop. They really do. And I wouldn't wish 22-year-old me on any woman in a relationship. And really, 22-year-old guys, they're kind of the worst.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, the only thing worse than 22-year-old guys is teenage guys.
The absolute worst.
The absolute worst.
The only worse than 22-year-old guys is 21-year-old guys. I agree, though. I think for my thing for Hannah is to make sure that you are ready, because Hannah, don't be also forgetting that you are 22 as well. And so just make sure you're ready for a relationship, because then if you start dating older, a guy who's like 29, 30, they're going to be ready for a relationship. Mm-hmm. So just be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of guys you're dealing with right now are, you know, very fluid and just don't really care. And so when you deal with someone who's ready for a relationship, it's going to be different conversations.
And it could be a little scary.
Exactly.
To hear that from another guy.
Because if a guy is in his late 20s, I mean, he could be ready to potentially find someone he wants to be with for a very long time.
One more point I'd like to make on this. When you bring up the talk, guys always want a friends with benefits type scenario. Now, that leads me to believe that you've given them a reason to believe a friends with benefits situation is on the table.
That's why I brought up I said to Kendall, I think some girls want to ask, have you slept with other people? And the way they ask that is not by saying, have you slept with anybody? It's,
sure.
Are we just, is it just us?
Well, this is when I, you know, I get eye rolls when I say stuff like this, because I'm the old one and I'm the dad and I've got daughters. But my advice to Hannah is don't sleep with these guys so soon.
Yes.
If you really want a relationship with these guys, let them get to know you. If they're intrigued by you, they'll stick around a little longer than if they get what they're looking for so quickly and then they're going to move on.
Dangle the carrot.
Dangle it.
I agree.
I don't know. I know maybe that's not reality in 2020. I don't know, but this is my advice.
That's good advice. maybe a 22-year-old probably wouldn't stick around for very long, but at the end of the day, that weeds them out anyways.
And exactly. Time.
Yeah. But there's ways to, I always feel like there's ways to have the serious conversation without having the serious conversation. Like, instead of saying, do you want to be monogamous or do you want to do this? Maybe ask like a creative, fun question that gives them an out to be funny. Or, but then if they actually are interested in you, they can, they would probably gear it towards something that would be more serious.
You could even make a comment like, oh, I was out last weekend, some guy tried to hit on me, but I was like not interested or something.
You know, yeah, like hinting.
There's ways to position it to see how they respond.
I think an interesting question is, if you had a clock that could count down to any moment in your life, what would you want that clock to count down to? And that's like that leaves a space open for, well, I'd want it to count down to the next person that I meet. Or I'd want it to count down to like when I get an awesome car. It's like the way you take a question like that shows what you are looking for and shows what you're prepared for.
I saw your tweet and I was going to respond sarcastically, but I was just like, ah,
I did tweet that, but I thought it was an interesting question for like getting to know someone and getting to know what their inner voice is saying.
Well, absolutely. Dean, what's your clock ticking down to?
My sarcastic response was going to be to the time I lose my virginity. But I didn't really think about it very seriously.
You gotta go back in time.
I don't, negative. No, I don't know. I don't know what mine would be. I'll think about it. I'll come back next week with an answer for you there.
Do you have one, Jared? This is fascinating.
What?
The clock, your countdown clock. So this is something you're excited for, like New Year's Eve.
Or
exactly. Like something you're looking forward to and counting the minutes until.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to have kids, but I also don't think Ashley and I are, I mean, we're ready to a sense, but I'm also ready to push it off for a little while longer.
So that would be a stressful clock looking at, no matter what number we're on it.
It's an exciting clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also,
well, what would you want it to be, like, genuinely?
What, like, what, sex?
No, well, I mean, yeah, sex is great, but what would you want your clock to be?
What do you mean?
Like, that's, what would you want like your what, countdown to be?
Counting down to a specific moment.
It doesn't
that
have to be
I just said, a kid.
Oh, you want
that was your answer. Okay.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. Like, I'm trying to think of the next stage of my life. I guess buying a house. I've always wanted to own property, and I never have. So I think buying something that's mine, that'd be really cool. Potentially owning my own business. But again, these are all also like very generic things. I wish
but those are good. Those are very good.
Yeah, it just shows what your priorities are right now that are at top of mind.
We heard about that. Yeah, great. That's what we need is another podcast host that doesn't live in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh, that'd be unbelievable.
I'll call in, guys. We
great. Oh, that sound great.
Get out of here.
Oh
yeah, no. What's wrong with LA? Awesome, I want to know.
I agree.
I think not for a while.
Mine would be, I got an answer for you, is just when I could walk without crutches again.
Oh,
on the immediate horizon. So let's go ahead and get that squared away, and then I'll move on to the next thing.
What does the doctor say?
They say my hip will have fully began rebuilding the bone after 6 weeks from surgery, from the accident. So that's in 3 weeks. I could potentially walk again. I think I'll be walking sooner than that, but I'm not going to put any, I'm not going to risk it.
Yeah,
so.
You shouldn't push that.
Yeah.
Don't push it.
And what would yours be?
Mine would be, yeah, you're putting me on the spot. I can't even answer my
own question. You brought it up. Yeah.
Come on.
I think it changes a lot, but I think mine would probably be, right now my mind's thinking, oh, when would I want to like own property? That's something that I've been thinking about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess when will I feel, I've gotten to a place in my life where, I'm like comfortable and I can, I don't know. It's really hard to answer this question
right
now.
How about when your podcast gets picked up by Fox as the hot new mid-season replacement series?
What? Exactly. Yeah. Wait. Where two people have 45 minutes.
Yes.
To
true. Okay. Yeah. When will Dan's
video show?
Sorry. She was onto something. I wanted to hear what she was going to say.
I guess the one thing. So it's really hard because I try not to live in the future. I think that's like something that bugs people and allows people not be happy in the present.
How do you do that?
How to really not quickly. Live in the future?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people have trouble doing that.
I feel like I try to just, I think reading a lot allows me not to live in the future. It allows me to be in the present and to like reflect on things that relate to my life now. And I think as when I'm learning something is when I feel like I'm growing myself currently and presently.
Hmm.
So that's how I.
So keep yourself learning.
So you recommend everyone but you have a countdown clock to
something.
Yes,
except for me. I'm not allowed to be put on the spot, but everyone else is.
All right, give us one countdown, one clock countdown.
It'd be interesting to see when, I think, oh, maybe like when I die.
Oof. You'd want to know?
I mean, yeah,
Kendall's
there's a lot of pain in that.
Heat today.
Well, because then you can feel like you don't have to be stressed about it. and kind of knowing at that point.
You'd be so stressed. If it's at 24 hours, you'd be so stressed about it.
I'd be
you'd
so wrap curious if it's at 24 hours.
Yeah.
I was like, not going in the street, not going to like talk to anybody.
What are you curious about? Anyways. What happens after you die?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends. I think there's a lot of things that could potentially happen after you die.
That's the scary part.
Yeah.
What if nothing happens? Not to be that guy.
I mean, energy is neither created or destroyed, so it goes somewhere. But, like, consciousness is the question. Like, where does your consciousness go after you die? I mean, when you fall asleep or when you are put to sleep during a surgery, where were you then?
I woke up.
You were nowhere.
I was nowhere.
So I guess that's proof that maybe there's nothing.
Oh, God.
That reminds me of a book I read. I read a book called They Both Die at the End, which I do recommend, by the way. It's a young adult novel, and most of the novels I read are that. But it's the premise is there's
a
service.
We're going to skip
right over that one? Sorry, guys. I mean, you know.
There's a service that calls you the day you're going to die. And they say, we're very sorry to tell you this, but this is your last day on Earth. You know, so sorry, get your affairs in order, but this is it. And you, so sometime in the next 24 hours, you are going to die and you don't know how, but that's reality. Everybody gets that call in the whole world. So it's not like this, you're expecting it, you're dreading it. But when that call comes, you got to do the best you can.
See, I'd prefer that. Like, I'd appreciate that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're like, oh, dang it. I need to write my will and testament. Like, I've never even written one.
No, yeah.
So, you know, like,
I've been thinking about writing a will lately.
Yeah, after your accident.
Well, before
somebody's
got to
take the van.
I think it was once I got licensed to skydive. I was like, if I die, I want my brothers to like have my money and all
that's
my
nice.
In the van. Obviously,
yeah, that's really nice.
I mean, I haven't done it.
Well,
so
the van should go to a museum, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so. I've actually. Well, I had a funny story. So yesterday, I was driving the Jeep from Venice to West Hollywood, and I'm starting to explain the story, I realize I don't want to explain it anymore. But we were driving. I was driving my Jeep, and my roommate was driving my van. And so I've got vanity plates for both of my cars because I'm an asshole. I'm that guy. And we were driving through West Hollywood. We got lunch, and there was this big TMZ truck that drove by. And Caitlin was in the passenger seat, and I was like, "Oh, look, it's a TMZ truck!" All of a sudden, it stops dead in the tracks right in front of us, and the lady runs out on the loudspeaker, going, "It's Dean! It's Dean!
Oh my God!
It's Dean!" I don't know why I got how I thought of this story, but it was one of the most bizarre experiences of my entire
life. I'll bet.
Did you try like running away in your precious?
Well, I was in my car, so I just got into the oncoming traffic lane and zipped off.
Why didn't you say hi to the nice tourists?
I honked at them a couple times.
Okay,
that's good.
Well,
anyways,
yeah, the TMZ bus is nice because those are people just kind of that aren't in LA and just seeing
yeah.
the sights.
That was my segue into ending this podcast. I think
fair enough.
It was. Anyways, thank you so much for the listeners out there for joining us on the second episode of the year 2020. We love you guys.
What's the email, Dean?
The email is isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. Email us, please. I will get on my one good knee and beg you all to email us. We love the listener emails. Hannah, we hope that Kendall's advice helped you, or maybe Jared's, or maybe mine. Email us, isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. Big thank you to our guest, Tracy McMillan. Don't forget the doctor at the beginning of that, too.
Doctor, not doctor.
Be sure to check her out on Family or Fiance on the OWN Network. And, of course, Kendall, thank you for coming in and co-hosting with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
I know this might be challenging because you already host your own podcast. You got a lot going on. But we need you in studio more often.
It'd be fun.
Yeah.
I like talking about all the cerebral things. I'll bring down the mood a little bit with my darkness.
Oh, I love it.
Dark
what we need. Bring the darkness.
That's what we need. Is there anything else we want to give thanks to, Mark or Easton?
I think that's going to do it for today.
Great. Well, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you for being here. Nice to have you in studio, Dean.
It's good to be back.
Glad you're okay.
I'm going to be here for the foreseeable future since
Yay!
I'm not allowed to travel technically. So, thank you guys for listening. Be sure to tune in next week where maybe we will suck just a little bit less.
Follow Help, I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.